Morning. Today's daf in Baba Basra's Kuf Samach Aleph. Second daf now of the 10th parak of Baba Basra. We are discussing Gittin in general. We're talking about documentation, contracts. Again, as I introduced yesterday, as I pointed out, when it comes to the word get itself is a... it's not a Hebrew word, it's an Aramaic word. It describes a general contract, and we use it generally in terms of not just any contract, but specifically that of a divorce. I pointed out yesterday a couple of reasons why that's the case. The gematria of the word get is 12, which represents the 12 lines of a divorce document, which is nowhere in the Torah nor in the Gemara mentioned, but it's a standard practice. It's minhag Yisrael to make the get 12 lines long. And on top of that, also as pointed out yesterday, I've heard this number of times, the word gimel and tes never occur next to one another in all of Tanakh. Signifying the divorce of a man and woman. But anyway, the word get, though, is just really more generic. It really just refers to a document in general. And it's basically a contract. It can be used in terms of a divorce. It can be used in terms of acquisition. Whenever a contract is required and or effective, so the word get is going to be used. And as we learned yesterday in the beginning of the 10th parak of Baba Basra, there's two types of get. There's two types of contracts, documents. One is a get pashut, the other is a get mekusha. Get pashut is what you and I would look at and say that's what a contract looks like. There's writing, and at the bottom of the page there's signatures, and that's a regular contract. That's a get pashut. We also learned yesterday that there was an innovation that was done by the Chachamim. The Gemara yesterday spent a little bit of time trying to tease it out of psukim in Yirmiyahu, and even the Gemara suggests maybe a pasuk in the Chumash as well. But the truth of the matter is the Gemara acknowledges that it's a din d'rabbanan, it's a rabbinic innovation, and that is to make another type of get, which is called get mekushar. Now, get mekushar, it's hard for me to explain. Now, it's hard for me to explain because, not because, you know, I'm lacking in the ability to explain, although sometimes I am, but it's hard to explain because I've never seen it. Not only have I never seen it, nobody I know has seen it as well. Not only that, the Rishonim haven't seen it. It's been out of use for some time. I can't tell you the last time a get mekushar has been used. I don't know. But I can tell you for sure that already by the Rishonim, nobody was using get mekushar. I can also tell you that even when the Rambam describes the halachas, so the Rambam doesn't talk about get mekushar. Why doesn't the Rambam talk about get mekushar? Because it's no longer in practice. Meaning it was an institution that was done for a temporary period of time, but it was no longer used even in the time of the Rambam. So that takes us back some time. That's a significant. That's really a long time ago. I tried. Okay, as you can see over here, I tried to recreate a get mekusha and what a get mekusha looks like. Okay, props. I came with props today. So the that's right. It's right. Anyway, okay. Possibility exists that this is what it looked like. But again, it's. We're gonna go through all that today. The way the Gemara presents it, that the get mekusha comes at a later point in time. That's what it sounds like from the Gemara. Okay, why was get mekusha instituted? So that we saw yesterday in the Gemara as well. That was part of the first staff of the 10th parak of Baba Basra. We saw get mekusha. Excuse me. Well, we saw get mekusha being instituted by the Chachamim, basically for the Kohanim. Kohanim are zrizim; they are they're very excited, they're very excitable, and sometimes they could be a little bit contentious. And all this I'm saying in the most positive sense possible. And the Gemara says, and sometimes what they're going to do is they're going to divorce their wives without putting serious consideration to the matter. Meaning, obviously, that it's a serious matter, and obviously they took the matter seriously, but they didn't give it the proper deliberation that's necessary. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, the consequence of a man divorcing his wife is that it's terrible, but it's not irreversible, meaning if they want to decide to get married again, they may do so. Now, admittedly, by the way, I didn't mention this yesterday, but I'll mention it today, and it's a pasuk in the Torah, meaning, can you take back the wife you divorced? The answer is yes or no. If she didn't marry someone, yes, so then you can take her back. But once she marries somebody else, and then she divorces that second man, so then it's an issur in the Torah to take her back. That's machzik grushaso, that's the issur of machzik grushaso. One is not allowed to marry his divorcee once she marries another man. In fact, To be fair, the Torah speaks very harshly about that. The Torah describes it as a toeva. So the Torah says that kind of behavior is an abomination. There's a sforno over there. It's a fascinating sforno. So he says that the reason why the Torah speaks so harshly and in such harsh terms about taking back a divorced woman after she married another man is that I'm not quoting the language of the sforno. You'll forgive me. I always remember it better in the English than in the original language, which isn't good. But the sforno over there says it's basically it's the legalized adultery. In other words, basically what you're doing is basically the woman is being with another man, quote unquote, legally. And in other words, the letter of the law is fine, but in other words, it's basically in the spirit of the law, it's basically legalized adultery. So that's why the Torah speaks in such harsh terms about it. But anyway, I digress. When a man divorces his wife, so it is not irreversible. It is to a certain degree reversible. When a Kohen divorces his wife, however, that is irreversible. You can't marry her again. She's a grusha. She's a divorced woman. Even though she's your grusha, doesn't matter. She's a grusha. Well, Cohen's not allowed to marry a grusha. So it is irreversible. So therefore, the Chachamim want the Kohanim to give a little bit more time and a little more deliberation in terms of the finality of this moment. You know you're going to divorce your wife and you know you're not going to be able to marry her again. So therefore, what they did is they made a process called Get Mekushar. It is basically the writing of a get, which is going to be done in a much more painstaking fashion and by intention, by design. So that the more time it takes to write the Get Mekushar, so the more time the Kohen now is going to think to himself, maybe this is not the best idea, maybe I should reconsider, right? There's, you know, in other words, they're the general, you know, thinking and rethinking about a certain decision that's being made, especially with the finality of that decision. Okay, so that's everything that we saw yesterday. Now, Get Mekushar is not necessarily limited to Gittin, meaning you could write a Get Mekushar even on a transaction document. If I want to sell a property, and instead of writing a Get Pashar, I'm going to write a Get Mekushar, you could do that, meaning using the same format and formula that we're describing now to write a Get Mekushar. Even though, again, I'll say under my breath, it's not practiced nowadays. But if you opt into writing a Get Mekushar, so you could do that even in a transaction document as well. Again, write to Fishtar Mekach, you can write a Get Mekushar as well. And again, with the rules and regulations as we are described in the Mishnah, as we're going to be describing also in the course of today's daf. So far, so good. Just a quick recap of everything we discussed yesterday through today's daf. I'm sorry. As we're going to go through today's daf, let's pick it up where we left off yesterday. We are on Kuf Samach Amud Beis 160b, and we are about two-thirds of the way down. We just explained the reason of why it is the rabbis instituted the Get Mekushar. I already explained it in the introduction. Heichan Eidim Chosmen. So the Gemara now asks the question, where do witnesses sign on the Get Mekushar? Okay, so again, I brought in props today. For those who are only listening, I apologize. You don't get to see my fancy props, but basically here's a template of what a Get Mekushar would look like. So you basically now have writing, and again, everything I'm explaining right now is conjecture on my part because again I've never seen a Get Mekushar, and on top of that, as I mentioned yesterday, I'm following the Rashbam's description of a Get Mekushar. This is not the only way the Get Mekushar is described amongst the Rishonim. Other Rishonim have different descriptions of the Get Mekushar, so I'm only explaining it as per the Rashbam's explanation. Okay, so everything I'm saying is with a lot of disclaimers and with a lot of limitations. Sorry about that. Anyway, on the Get Mekushar, so here's what you would do. You would have writing and then you would have blank space. Then you would fold. And the way the Rashbam described it, then you would stitch the fold. And then you would have a witness sign on the back. Now, if you'll notice, I don't know how well everyone can see what I did. If you'll notice, the signatures are going not horizontally, but the signatures are going vertically. How do I know that? Because I looked ahead at the Gemara today. So, and you'll see what I mean. So, but basically, stitched and now signed. Now we're going to write another on the front side, another line of text. Once again, we're going to fold. We're going to stitch, and we're going to have witnesses signing now once again. And we're going to keep doing that until we get to the end of the document. Okay, so basically, we're going to write a line, leave a line blank, fold, stitch, and do that. Minimum of three witnesses signing on the Get Mekushar that we already learned back in the Mishnah. And that is basically where we are holding right now in the Gemara, in the description of Get Mekusha. Now,
Sign as the document is written part by part.
Yeah, so the Rashbam's explanation presents a problem, and Ben already pointed it out, and I'll formally say it. The Rashbam's explanation of the Get Mekusha is problematic because you have witnesses signing before we conclude the writing of the document. And I'm just here to admit that's difficult. It's a problem. It's not an easy problem to address. I don't know the solution.
You can be signing and then talking.
Right, but in other words, you're signing before the conclusion.
You write all that. Fold. Don't tie it up. Sign and then talk.
Okay, the Rashbam. If you read the Rashbam inside, it doesn't sound that way. It sounds like more like they're signing as they're writing. If you're right, so then that's a nice solution, but I don't get that sense as I read the Rashbam that that's the way he's describing it. But if you're right, good. That would work out good. Okay. Where we are at in the Gemara right now is we're talking about the signatures. Now remember, what's unusual about a Get Mekusha is that the text is on one side and the signature is on the back side. Right now, let's assume, because I had the signatures going vertically, Don't follow my model right now, because we're still in the process of learning all this. So right now, let's assume that the signatures are still going horizontally. And if we're assuming that, so remember now, on the front side, text space. So now we're having the signature sign on the back side. So your two options are they could be signing opposite the text or they could be signing opposite the space. Where are they signing on the back? That's the Gemara's question. That's what we're discussing right now. In the Gemara. Kuf Samach Amud Beis. The Gemara says, Heichan Edim Chosman, where do the witnesses sign? So Rav Huna Amar, Bein Kesher LeKesher. So Rav Huna is of the opinion that they sign between one fold and the next fold. Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba Amar, Achorei Haksav. Ukineged Haksav Mibachutz. Now Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba says that what they do is they sign on the back of the document corresponding to where the writing is. Okay, so according to Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba, actually very clear, very simple. In other words, so again, on the front side, it's text followed by space. Now you're going to fold and you're going to stitch. Right now, at this stage of the Gemara, Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba has the witnesses signing on the back, right alongside where the text is. Okay.
That means that each signature is to attest to that part of the text.
Right. Correct.
So the question that you asked before, how can they write it, signed before the whole shtar is made? They're signing on that portion. That's opposite their signature.
Right.
But it's incomplete.
It's one of those questions which I know, which I'm familiar with. I don't have a good solution. Okay, anyway. So Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba is very good. Now, the Gemara doesn't start off with analysis of Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba, just goes in the other direction. So Amalei, ukenekizav mebachot. Fine. Continuing in the Gemara, Amalei Rami Baruch, Amalei Rav Chista. So now, a later set of Amoraim are discussing these two opinions, specifically Rami Baruch Amma and Rav Chista. Li Rav Huna. So we're going to go back to the first shita, which is the shita of Rav Huna. The Amar Ben Kesher LeKesher. Now he says between a fold and the next fold. Now. So the Gemara says, now the Gemara telegraphs its punch. We think right now that his opinion is that it's between the folds but on the front side. Now, even this Havamina is a strange Havamina, meaning we pretty much know the signatures are going on the back. On a Get Mekusha, how the Gemara can even entertain such a Havamina is a little bit strange, but the Gemara does. The Gemara just thinks for a moment that according to Rav Huna, they're signing on the front, in other words, on the blank space in the front. So the Gemara says, Va'ahu Mekusha Dekasa Kamed to Rebbe. So the Gemara says, now there was a Get Mekusha that was brought to Rebbe. Okay, this is Rebbe Yehuda Nasi. Which, and I'm pointing that out because he's a Tana, obviously the last generation of Tanaim, but it's almost like clear, I commented this, Ben and I discussed this yesterday, it's almost like clear, like even Rebbe wasn't like, he wasn't like super familiar with what a get mekusher looked like. I mean, as I pointed out in the beginning of today's shiur, the Rishonim have no idea what it looks like. Not no idea, but like no practical idea. Meaning it wasn't done in the time of the Rishonim. Already at this point in time, this is post Chorban Bayis Sheni. This is like the year approximately year 200, right? The beginning of the end of the second century, beginning of the third century. Like even Rebbe like kinda doesn't fully like isn't perfectly familiar with what a get mekusha looks like. So anyway, how mekusha the gossel come to Rebbe? So there was a get mekusha that was born in front of Rebbe. V'am Rebbe ain't zman b'zeh, and Rebbe looked at it and he's like, "Where's the date?" Meaning he's looking at the get mekusha and he's trying. He's like, "Yeah, right. Right. We learned this back in Gittin on Daf Yud Zayin. Like every time you write a document, it needs a date. Like, where's the date?" So Amalei Rebbe Shimon Rebbe Le Rebbe. So his son now points to his father and says, "Well, you know, I think I know where the date is. It's in the folds." Meaning, remember, it's a folded document, so it's probably going to be in the folds. So Shema Bink Sharav Muvla. So perhaps I love the way the son talks to his father. Like, you know, like Dad, maybe, right? Maybe it's between the folds. So Palya V'Chazya. So they unfolded the document and they took a look, and lo and behold, it was there. His son was right. Okay. Anyway. What do we see from the story? Meaning, aside from my general observation of, like, Rebbe didn't know that? Okay, but that's a more general observation. But specifically to our discussion, like, Rebbe's looking at the Get Mekusha and Rebbe's perfectly confused. Like, where's the date? Now, clearly it's been folded, so the only thing he could see is really the back of the document, not the back of the print, not the front of the document. V'im isa ein zman b'zeh v'ein edim b'zeh mi ba'ilei. Now, if the way we thought Rav Huna set up is that where the signatures are signing are not on the back of the document but on the front of the document between the writing, in other words, in those blank spaces. So when Rebbe's looking at this document and it's folded and he can't see the front of the document, so his amazement should not be the absence of a date. His amazement should be the absence of signatures, meaning if the signatures are on the front. So there's no way, after hearing the story, there's no way that anyone can entertain the idea that the signatures are existing on the front of the document. The signatures must be on the back of the document, because that's the first thing Rebbe would have picked up on if it was absent.
It's tied up. The whole thing is tied up, like what you have there.
Yeah.
So when it's tied up,
you still see some signature.
What is
it? Huh? He's looking at the back of a document.
Just that's full.
So Gemara, and we knew this was going to happen, so the Gemara says, no, of course Rav Huna does not mean that the signatures are signing on the front of the document. They're signing on the back of the document, and they're just signing, meaning, and now here's the machlokas. Whereas Rav Yirmiyahu bar Abba says that here's the text, and the signature is going opposite the text on the other side. Rav Huna is telling us is that here's a blank space and the signatures are going opposite the blank space on the other side, and that, the Gemara says, is the debate between Rav Huna and Rav Yirmiyahu bar Abba. Fine. The Gemara says, now that we're here, v'nechosh. The Gemara says, well, let's have another concern and a different one as well. Dilma zay v'kasa of my debay v'chasim isahade. So the Gemara says, well, why don't we worry about the following? Now, let's talk about before I explain this Gemara's question over here, let's just talk about a regular document. A regular document, how do you know beginning and end? It's really simple. Meaning, you look at the page, you look at the writing, and then what happens is that when you get to the bottom of the text, the witnesses are signing immediately below the last line of the text. And so therefore, in terms of inserting anything more into the document, well, there's nowhere to put it. Meaning, you're already at you're at the top of the page where it started. The bottom of the page is now bordered by the signatures who are signing on the bottom. And so there's nowhere to add information into a regular document. It makes it not perfectly foolproof, but in other words, it kind of provides literally the boundaries for a document. Fine. The Gemara says, but get mekusha. Get mekusha now is going to be a little bit strange. It's going to be unusual. Because we have the text on one side and the signatures on the other side. Now, according to Rav Huna, where are the signatures signing? Opposite the text. So the Gemara says, so we're good, right? Meaning, in the sense that, here's text, I'll look at the back, here's signature. Here's text, here's signature. So basically, how do I know where there's text? Because I look at the back of the document and I'm going to find a signature opposite it. Now, I understand the signature is obviously going to be much shorter than the actual text itself. I do understand that. But at least it gives us some sort of boundary of where we should expect text. However, according to Rav Huna, where the signatures are opposite the blank space, so that means then that where there's text, there's no signature on the back, so we really don't know where the demarcation of where the text should have ended per se. And what the Gemara now is suggesting is that according to Rav Huna, since the signatures are not opposite the text, so maybe then what it could allow is that if somebody wants to add a little more information into the actual text of the document, so he may do so. You know, the good words kind of like where, like, you know, you write your check and you write your number, and you don't want to leave any space between where you end up writing the number and where, you know, where they line in. So you just simply, you know, you write a line, you know, indicating that there's nothing more that should go over here. So the Gemara says, so according to Rav Huna, if the signatures are only going opposite the blank space, doesn't it allow somebody who wants to add a little more information the opportunity to do so? Obviously illegally, obviously illicitly. That's the Gemara's question. So the Gemara says, we have in contract law, at least in the halacha, we have something equivalent to a period. And that is that we have the words Hakol Shrir V'Kayam. Hakol Shrir V'Kayam is basically the conclusion of a contract, which basically says we've come to the end of the contract. There's nothing more. There should be nothing more after that. So the Gemara says, V'nichash Dilma Kasav Mai Dabai V'Hadaksiv Shrir V'Kayam Achrina. So the Gemara says, well, if Hakol Shrir V'Kayam is going to be the closure of every document, so why not have the unscrupulous person holding the document, how about him running a subparagraph and then adding another Hakol Shrir V'Kayam? But the Gemara's answer, which you probably would have guessed, is Chad Shrir V'Kayam Kasvina Trei Shrir V'Kayam Lo Kasvina. Gemara says, as a closing statement of every document, you only get to use it one time, you don't get to use it twice. Once it's being used twice in a document, so that kind of is the tell, it's an easy tell, that, hey, this is a forged document. There was something added artificially into this document. Okay, so the Gemara says like this, V'leichesh Dama Machik Lei L'Shrir V'Kayam V'Kasamai Dabai V'Hadaksiv Shrir V'Kayam. So the Gemara says, okay, well, if Hakol Shrir V'Kayam, those three words, if they are the closure for every document, so again, if you're talking about somebody who's unscrupulous, so here's what you do. So you take your eraser, you erase the words Hakol Shrir V'Kayam, you write whatever additional you want to write, and he owes me $1 million. Okay, you want to write whatever, and he owes me $1 million, and then Hakol Shrir V'Kayam, and then add at the end. So the Gemara says, well, that's not going to work as well, meaning the Chachamim thought about that, and the Chachamim have also negated that possibility as well. Hamar of Yochanan, Tuluya Mikuyemes Kshera Machak Paso. If let's say you have to make any kind of amendment to a document, so this is what's called Tuluya. Okay, remember back in the good old days when you used to write? Right, what was that, a year ago, 2 years ago? I don't know, but back in the good old days we used to write. And when you wrote, so sometimes you forgot a word. So what you do is you make a little arrow pointing upwards and then you added a word on top of that. Okay, that's not a new innovation. They used to do that back then as well. Meaning, so if you forget a word, right, you had the sofer, the scribe writing, and he's writing a sentence, and oops, he forgot a word. Okay, so make a little witchik, and then right above the line, you're going to write the word that you forgot to add. So that's what the Gemara here describes as Tuluya. The Gemara says, Tuluya Mikuyemes Kshera. As long as you made some sort of note on the document saying, yes, I've added a word, so that's what the Gemara describes as Mikuyemes, so then it's going to be acceptable. Meaning that document is going to be acceptable, and that small little amended word that you added is going to be acceptable. However, Machik. But if there's any erasure on the document, no good. Puzzle. it is going to be disqualified. And that's even if there's a note on the bottom of the document saying, hey, I know there's an erasure on this document. Yes, I erased the document. Even if you write that, it's no good. An erasure is simply unacceptable on the document. So the...
Same with medical notes, by the way.
Yeah.
You are not allowed.
Right. So the and to which now the Gemara basically saying, so look, what was our concern? Our concern was HaKosher V'Kayam is now the closure of every document. The Gemara says, well, why not worry about a person adding a subparagraph with another HaKosher V'Kayam? The Gemara says no, because HaKosher V'Kayam you only get to use once in a document, not twice. Gemara says, well, why not worry about an erasure? Gemara says, I'll tell you why. It's very simple. Because once you see an erasure in a document, that already is a disqualifier of a document. So we're not worried about somebody erasing the words HaKosher V'Kayam, adding a paragraph with another HaKosher V'Kayam. Now, V'lo Amru Machach Pasal Ela B'Makom Shir V'Kayam U'Kishir Shir V'Kayam. So the Gemara says, and oh, by the way, an erasure is not an absolute posel. It won't just simply disqualify under any circumstance. It has to be where you could have imagined the words HaKosher V'Kayam being written on the document, meaning I would guess towards the bottom of the page. And on top of that, it also has to be enough erasure where you could actually write the words HaKosher V'Kayam. Meaning, let's say it's a letter, and let's say wrong letter, and you want to erase. I'm not talking about a Sefer Torah, we're just talking about a document. And you want to erase, and you want to write the correct letter. That's fine. Meaning a small erasure like that would be fine. But if we're talking about the erasure where it covers the amount of HaKosher V'Kayam in a place where it's possible that HaKosher V'Kayam was actually written over there, Gemara says that's the post, so that's going to be the disqualifier. Okay. So we're on Kuf Samech Aleph Amud Aleph. We are three lines down. And basically what the Gemara now is entertaining are two opinions in the Gemara regarding where are we signing on the Get Mekusha. So we have now Machlokas Amoraim, Rav Huna, Rav Yirmiyahu bar Abba. Rav Huna is of the opinion that we're signing on the document not opposite the text, but opposite the empty space. According to Rav Yirmiyahu bar Abba, where the witnesses are signing opposite the text on the other side of the page, the Gemara has spent a little bit of time now trying to go over what is considered a fair concern, what is considered not a fair concern. Okay.
If you have 12 lines, right?
There are only three witnesses who are signing on the document. Minimum three. You could have more.
No, I'm saying you have 12 lines, there are 12 folds.
No, not necessarily. There only has to be let's say there are gonna be three folds, meaning again, a fold would be like this. So 3, 6, 9. Right, correct. Okay, not. I'm not perfectly sure, but you know, you don't have to fold on every line. Meaning, you could write a series of lines and then fold, another series of lines and then fold. Okay. The Valechus Dilma custom Gavai my Dabai Umachtim Sahadi Yaseira me Avrai. The Amar Ana Larabas Be'edim Huda Avde. So the Gemara says, okay, once again we're worried about unscrupulous people, and you gotta think like them, and you gotta anticipate. And the Gemara says, then why don't we anticipate the following? Look, even according to Rav Yirmiyahu bar Abba, where you have the witnesses signing opposite text, okay. You don't need three people signing. Let me start it better. You do need three witnesses signing on a Get Mekushar, but you could have more. You could have four. You could have five. Three is a minimum. So the Gemara says, so why not do the following? In other words, again, for the unscrupulous person, so have now write an additional subparagraph in the Get Mekushar, because remember, the whole thing's not folded. Meaning it's folded, and there's a bottom left over here. Now, the way I described it, the way I designed it, I have very little bottom over here. But here, let's assume that there's this much bottom. Do the following, suggests the Gemara. And that is, write another subparagraph, have a fourth witness signing on the back over here, and that's another way to just simply add more text into the document. You see, again, On a plain paper, on a single-sided document, none of this is ever concerned because it's paragraph, hakol shiriv kayam, witness is signing just below that. You're done. But on the get mekushar, because of the fluidity of text, fold, signing on the back, so just simply have another subparagraph, another signature on the back, you could have a fourth witness, and the Gemara says, and why are we worried about that?
It's going to be below the shul rikayam.
It will.
Right.
Okay. Fine. Fine. Okay. Good.
So how can you be good? Rikayam means this is it.
Right.
Finish.
Right. Okay. Could be. So let's see. Let's see how the Gemara responds. So lechushnu makasim megavai ma'ay debayu machdim sadi yisera me'avrei va'amar anol rabos be'edim udavdi. I'm like mitzvahs edim kisidram chasimei edim mimatal amala chasimei. So now here's where the Gemara makes a pivotal shift, where up until now we've been assuming that the signatures are going horizontally, in parallel with the text on the front side. And now the Gemara makes a shift where no, the signatures are perpendicular. And now that the signatures are perpendicular, so basically now you're going to be having the signatures on a vertical plane corresponding to what the text is on the front. So in other words, the text on the front is going from end to end on a horizontal plane. The signatures on the back now are covering the height of the text on a vertical plane. So that when I'm now looking at the back, opened it up, I saw my name on the back. Anyway, when you're opening it up and you're looking now on the back, so you're going to see now the vertical signatures covering the span of the text. So now I know the parameters of where the text is. Meaning if I'm looking at the back, especially if I look it up to hold it up to the light, if I'm looking at the back and I'm looking at the front, so now I know where the expectation is of where the text begins and where the text ends. Okay. What do you mean? Oh, because it's cloth?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, but you could still somewhat gauge. Okay, Velechush Dama, so the Gemara says, so Chasime Edom Mimatala Mala Chasime. So Velechush Dama, Misrami Reusa Beshita Achrona, Vigaisle Lashita Achrona, Vigaisle Leruven Behadei, Omiskasher Beben Yaakov Eid. So the Gemara now is going to make a host of other suggestions of things we should anticipate and be concerned about. So the Gemara says, well, maybe there's something wrong with that last line. Not something wrong, but something you don't like about that last line of the contract. And what you do is, guys, leilishita achrona, you cut out that last line physically. Take a pair of scissors and you cut it out. And cut out Reuven, meaning Reuven is the name of the person signing it. Umiskasher ben Yaakov Eid. And what you're left with are the words Ben Yaakov Eid. Now, Ben Yaakov Eid, in terms of signing a document, how do you sign a document? So you actually write your name. So for example, my name is Dov Gedalia ben Meir. So in signing any shtar, so you write your name, son of your father. So in my case, Dov Gedalia ben Meir. Now, by the way, I know it's strange. My English name is Ben. My Hebrew name is Dov. But whatever. That's how it worked out. So Dov Gedalia ben Meir. So now, if let's say I opt to just simply sign my first name, Dov Gedalia, so then I have to write, the halacha is, I have to write Dov Gedalia Eid. Or I could just simply identify myself as Ben Meir, and then if I do that, I have to write the word Eid. Right, this is the Mishnahs give us these basic rules. If I want to write my full name, so then I don't need to write the word Eid. In other words, Dov Gedalia ben Meir, everybody understands, by me writing my name, son of so-and-so, I'm obviously signing off as a witness. But if I just write my first name, or if I just identify myself as Ben Meir, son of Meir, so then I have to write the word Eid. So the Gemara now is saying, well, if that's true, so why aren't we worried about In other words, if I wrote the words Dov Gadol Ben Meir and I wrote it vertically, and the guy didn't like some of the lines of the document, he could cut it out and just leave the words Ben Meir, and that would be sufficient. In the Gemara's case, Ben Yaakov. So Umiskanshe Ben Yaakov Ein. So Ditnan, and the Gemara quotes the Mishnah in Gittin, Ben Ish Ploni Eid Kasher. If a person writes and signs his name just by identifying who his father is, that in of itself is going to be Kasher. So the Gemara says, Dichsiv Ruvain Ben Bechadara V'Yaakov Eid Ilave. So the Gemara says, okay, very specifically the Gemara says that the way now to sign vertically on the Get Mekushar is to write Ruvain Ben, Ruvain son of, on one line. Again, we're talking vertically over here, not horizontally, but write that in one line. And then Yaakov Eid Ilave, and have the words Yaakov Eid on the other line. So the Gemara says, V'lechosh Dilma Gaiz Le L'Ruvain Ben, Umiskasher Bi Yaakov Eid. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, then you can cut out the words Ruvain Ben, and just leave the words Yaakov Eid, and that would be good. And did Nanish Pony Eid Kasher. And again, as per the Mishnah in Gittin, if you write just your first name, followed by the word Eid, so then that would be okay. Now, it happens to be that that's not his name, meaning in this particular case, he is Ruvain Ben Yaakov. But, again, if you're writing in two vertical rows, and you're writing in one row, Ruvain Ben in one, and Yaakov Ben in the other, so, or I should say better, Ruvain Yaakov in one, and Ben Eid in the next, and I would to then cut it along horizontally, just leaving the words Yaakov Eid, even though his name is not Yaakov, but years from now, people are going to look at it, and people are going to say, it's okay, because it has this, quote-unquote, what we think is his first name, and we also have the word Eid followed, and that's fine. So the Gemara says, Dolok Siv Eid. So the Gemara says, oh, so you know what? We'll have him write his full name, but not the word Eid. And again, it's just a technical law, it's a technical point, it's a detail in contract law, which is that when you sign your name, if you sign your full name, you don't need to write the word Eid. If you sign only your first name, or only your son of so-and-so, so then you do need to write the word Eid. So, to make this document as foolproof as possible, as safe as possible, as secure as possible, we'll have the person write his full name, but not the word Eid. And that means that if we're cutting any of the document out, either cutting out his first name or cutting out son of so-and-so, because it doesn't have the word Eid, therefore it's not going to be, it will not be acceptable. And again, another security measure to ensure the integrity of the document. The Ebay Samal Olam Dixiv Eid, or the Gemara says, or maybe no. Maybe the word Eid is left over there. And the Adinan Ba Dahachasimos Yada Lav Diakovu. And it just happens to be that's common knowledge that that's not the way Yaakov signs it. Everybody knows, I know it sounds strange, but everybody knows that's not how Yaakov signs it. V'dilma b'shmei davu achasam. So the Gemara says, well, maybe a person is signing a document, not using his own name, but using his father's name. The Gemara says, lo shavik inish shmei diadei v'chasam b'shmei davu. So the Gemara says, that's very unusual. And a person doesn't do that. A person doesn't forego his own name to sign using somebody else's name, even if that other person happens to be his father. That's just very strange. So the Gemara says, okay, I know that sounds strange, but you know, signatures don't have to actually be letters and characters. Signatures can just simply be telltale signs that you signed this document. You look at people's signatures. I could show you mine. And you look at people's signatures, and they're barely discernible. They're barely legible. Sometimes they're just a simple scribble that indicates this is your signature. In fact, the Gemara tells us, as the Gemara has told us a number of other times throughout Shas, we have various Amorayim who don't even bother writing actual letters to sign their name. But what they do is they write basically characters. Pictures of other things that designate that it's their name. Rav, when he signs, so he would actually draw a fish. a fish would represent his signature, and Rav Chanina Tzir Harusa and Rabbi Chanina would draw a simple palm tree to indicate, or a palm frond to indicate that this is his signature. And Rav Chista Samach, Rav Chista would sign with the letter Samach, and Rav Oshia Ayin, Rav Oshia would sign with an Ayin, right? Letters that, so to say, characterize their name. And Rava Baravuna Makusa, and Rava Baravuna would sign with the mast of a sail as a telltale sign that he signed it. So the Gemara says these are all different symbols and signs that indicate that there is their signature. So the Gemara is just wondering now, so is it totally inconceivable to suggest that when a person is signing, as a symbol of what he's signing, he uses his father's name? It's inconceivable. And the Gemara says, basically, yeah. Lo chasiv inish l'shav l'shmei davu asimana. So the Gemara says, people don't do that. In other words, people won't use their father's name as a simon of something that represents their particular signature. The Gemara describes it as like a chutzpah. It's something which is disrespectful, if you will. Okay, let's pause over here. The Gemara is still in the middle of a discussion. Let's just quickly recap. What do we have right now? In terms of today's daf, we have a discussion of what is a gemar kushar, of a folded document. Again, as we learned in yesterday's daf, as a review in the beginning of this year today, it was an institution made by the Chachamim to basically prolong the whole contract writing process, and primarily its purpose was in order to delay the divorce of a kohen when he divorces his wife, so that he think about it and deliberate it just a little bit longer before doing something which is irreversible. Then, after that, we went deep, deep into the details of the writing of a gemar kushar today. And again, our struggle as we are learning all this is that we really don't know exactly what it looks like. And I kind of have my head wrapped around it, but admittedly, we don't exactly know what it looks like. And we spent a lot of time today focusing on the signatures on the back of the document, which we know, everyone is of the opinion that the signatures go on the back of a gemar kushar. In fact, that's one of the calling cards of a gemar kushar. It's now just a question of where they're going to be signing. So for a good part of today's daf, we thought that they were signing horizontally, parallel with the text on the front of the document. And with that in mind, then we had a debate, we deliberated. Are they signing on the text, or are they signing on the empty space? Then the Gemara shifted in thought in terms of the signatures on the back, not running horizontally, but rather running vertically. The Gemara, with that in mind, then went through a number of anticipated forges and corruptions of a document. Can't we cut out parts of the name? And still, even if I don't have a full name, if I have part of a name, that would be acceptable. And the Gemara tried to navigate through different ways of securing the document so that it is probably going to be untampered with. Okay. And we'll continue tomorrow.